All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the TEFCO Task Force meeting. This is our fourth meeting in the series, so let's get started, and I'll officially begin by taking roll. John Kansky?
I'm here.
Arian Malik?
Good morning.
Good morning. Carolyn Peterson?
Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron Neary? Cheryl Turney?
Present.
Sasha Termont.
Good morning.
Good morning. Steve Reedy. Cynthia Fisher. Benil Jain.
I'm here, phone only.
Okay, thank you. Andrew Truscott.
Present, on the phone only.
Thank you. Denise Webb. Not here on vacation. David McCauley.
Here.
Mark Savage.
Good morning, here.
Good morning. Norm Arts. Grace Terrell. And Laura Kahn. Okay, thank you very much. Arian.
All right, so as we discussed yesterday, we got through the majority of the MRTCs as well as the QTF. So that really represents the major updates of TEFCA 2 from TEFCA 1. And we wanted to prioritize today the key questions that came out of that broad level overview that we should be discussing as a group. So that we can formulate recommendations. And what we're going to do right now is do a presentation on what we heard out of the task force were the key questions that required discussion, as well as proposed prioritization of those key questions. And in the first part of this call, we really want to make sure that we've got from the task force first of all, to make sure that we've represented that list correctly and that we've represented the priorities correctly, because that will basically serve as the work plan for the next stage of our discussions. I guess the other thing that I want to update the group on is that we've gone back to ONC leadership on the time frame for the task force. There are two advisory committee meetings, one in June, on June 19th, and the other on July 11th. We've proposed, but have not yet been granted, an extension to give us until, to have us target June 19th to do draft recommendations and July 11th to do final recommendations. But I think we recognize that the cures and PRM and information blocking work that a number of us have been participating in has been taking, I think, appropriate precedence over the TEFCA task force work. And so we're really starting in earnest and most likely need more time. So reassure people that that request is in. Whether it'll be granted or not is a different question. John, anything you wanna add?
Let me just quickly ask, is anybody on the call today that missed the call yesterday?
Yes. Anil.
So
Andy.
Let me just make sure this makes sense to you, because it's the approach that we're taking, and Arian just said it, but just making sure, especially a couple of you guys, Anil, Andy, are only on the phone. You have there's a matrix in your email that you may or may not have seen or may not have in front of you that is a summary of basically yesterday we captured the key questions for discussion by the task force kind of across top to bottom of our charge. And so what we're going to do here early on the call is to try and make sure that we've captured and prioritized those, because as Arian said, that's kind of our work plan for going forward, is these are the items that will be discussed on the remainder of the call and future calls to formulate our recommendations. So I wanted to make sure that that approach was explained and kind of sort of makes sense. And I don't know if you guys are handicapped by just being on the phone or if you can cope.
I'm handicapped by myself, John, but no, I've already reviewed that matrix. I agree with everything that's in it, and I agree that the number one thing on that list is the number one thing. Now, what we're actually seeking to do with the test?
Yeah, and John, this is Anil. I will look at it later. I'm traveling, and so I have not had a chance to look at it, but I will look at it hopefully during, but if not, later.
Well, and importantly, at least you know what we're working on and trying to accomplish and what the
heck
we're talking
about.
Okay, good.
Exactly, yep.
All right, all that being said, should we get into reviewing the matrix and making sure that we fairly represented all of the key questions and at least appropriately represented priority? You know, we shouldn't argue about what's number one or number two, but if something's 10 and it's your number one, or if something's one and it's your number 10, those are things that we probably should make sure we address. So I think it's appropriate to then go into the matrix and make sure at this point we're not debating any of the items. We're just making sure that we've got and we're entering the matrix, or we're taking the blue pill or red pill or whatever it is. At this point we're not debating any of the items. We're just making sure that we've got the items represented in the worksheet appropriately. Does that make sense as an exercise?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So going down from the top of the list, our proposed tier one issues. Number one is, what are the broad goals of the TEFCA, and what's the economic model or incentive to be a key to, if you're a HIN, to be a QHIN? At least in this area, I think we proposed a tentative set of answers for this. The broad goals of the TEFCA should not just be to check the box on Congress's request of ONC to establish a test, but should be to enable better treatment, quality of care, and a more efficient health system. And then also a perspective that participation in the TEF should be presumed by participants who are working with HINs, who become QHINs, should be presumed at least to address some of the information blocking requirements. A whole bunch of questions on applicable law. We want to make sure that, and this is particular to yesterday's discussion on HIPAA and then the obligations on QHINs and also on participants that apply extra to HIPAA or that apply to non-HIPAA, to non-covered entities or non-BAs. And we want to understand and make sure that we know what applies in what situations and what conditions and in what cases can existing obligations be deemed to meet the QHIN or TEF requirements, the MRTC requirements, and in what cases are there genuinely new obligations that are placed on actors. We want to make sure that we have that we aren't requiring organizations, or if we are requiring them, we understand it, that we aren't requiring organizations to recontract around existing obligations or to add new obligations to actors that have already established in good faith kind of appropriate activities. There's a whole set of discussions on exchange modalities and the QTF. And in particular, is the QTF appropriately situated relative to the policy goals and for the MRTCs? There are a couple of particular questions, one around broadcast query and the other around directed or pushed query. So we should add pushed query to this. Number one is, do we understand the functional requirements for broadcast query in the MRTC? And number two is the QTF responsive to those broadcast query requirements? And do we understand the functional requirements for pushed or directed exchange? And are the technical enablements in the QTF responsive to those functional requirements? Exchange modalities and purposes, there's a lot of discussion about who needs to respond in what situations and for what purposes, and what are the obligations of a QHIN that I think are appropriate to discuss and make sure that we understand and B, agree with. So we had a discussion on individual access and the role of the individual, what is implied in exchange modalities as being permitted, what additional activities are permitted relative to applicable law, and what are the roles and responsibilities of a participant who's acting on behalf of the individual? And when are those roles part of the MRTCs? And when are they purely individual access roles? So after the call yesterday, I gave the example of, let's say, a mobile device vendor who enables individual access to a device and then subsequently enables the patient to make determinations about use of data for research purposes, as differed from somebody who's engaging in access for data, particularly for the purposes of research. So in some cases, you're on one side of the individual access boundary. In other cases, you're on the other.
Hey, Arian?
Yeah.
When there's a break, Andy has his telephonic hand raised.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, let's get through tier one and then bring Andy in. Let's go down.
Yep, go.
And then a whole discussion on meaningful choice and whether it's appropriate to exercise meaningful choice for treatment purposes. How do you exercise meaningful choice relative to SAMHSA and other sensitive information? And we had a brief discussion yesterday relative to the prospective versus retrospective exercise of meaningful choice. When is the horse already out of the barn? And is there a right to be forgotten relative to individual access and meaningful choice? So those are our proposed tier one items. I think Mark has his hand up, but first Andy had his telephonic hand up. So Andy, go ahead.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, John. Very quickly, there's a big list in there, Aaron, and I'm trying to just get my head around some of the core principles of what we're seeking to achieve with TEF. And what you say about are we creating new obligations in here? Well, my question is, should we be creating obligations, or should we be laying down a framework that demonstrates how obligations can be met, as opposed to defining new obligations or trying to say, thou shalt do it this way? It's that difference between what you do versus how you do it.
Yep. And again, our original TEF recommendations recommended that ONC establish broad objectives, broad and clear objectives, and then delegate to the RCE and QHINs the mechanisms for achieving those. I think ONC has listened to our recommendations and come up with what they believe is a minimal set of recommendations. And I think it is appropriate for us to relook at that and ask, is this really the right minimal set, or is there a different balance that could be struck? Great point.
Thanks.
Mark, and then David.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. I may have missed this, but just wanted to
say on the individual access services, I had a broader question about the definition of individual access, and PGHD was one example. So that's a good placeholder as is, just flagging that it's bigger than that.
Gotcha.
Okay, yeah, so we have the, you know, under the individual access services, right now it's pure query, is there a right to update, a right to modify, and a right to add relative to individual access? So I think we've got that question.
Okay.
You think it's broader than that?
I do, but I don't need to frame it for purposes of what we're doing today. I'm just
yeah,
saying.
You feel we've got an appropriate placeholder here for discussion.
Correct.
And you just want to
Correct.
Note that you think it's a bigger issue. Cool. David?
Yep.
I like this list a lot. And just a fine tuning on the broad goals number one point there, which is to ensure that it's clear how the TEF integrates with the information blocking in PRM in
yep.
terms of making sure they're not definitions that are out of sync or policies that force people one way or the other because of an unintended consequence in the context of the information blocking rule. It's a subpart of that incentive question, but even if you got the incentives aligned, you could create unexpected consequences by, you know, making it preferable to do TEF over some other approach or vice versa, more likely.
Yeah, and again, to note right now, there is no information blocking implication for being a participant who works with an HIN, so that's a QHIN. So it's not clear, it's not even clear what obligations of information blocking you're addressing through participation in TEFCA. There was an information blocking, a question about whether there should be an exception related to the MRTCs themselves, although they weren't called MRTCs in the information blocking rule, but nothing that, you know, I've described as a safe lane, because it's not quite a safe harbor or what have you. Anyway, okay, I don't see anybody else's hand up. Does anybody who's phone only want to make sure that they've got their tier one issues addressed?
Sorry, Erin, can I just make a quick comment on the info blocking
sure.
stuff?
Please.
I just want to be sure, and I know we talked to Elise and Mike about it a little bit, but I just want to be sure that we stay within the scope of our charge and don't get too deep into the connections between information blocking. I think we agreed we could sort of discuss it at a high level, like the goals of the
yep.
TEFCA as it relates.
No, I definitely appreciate that. So we don't want to get into the mechanics of information blocking because we already addressed them at a pretty detailed level. This is more making sure that if this task force believes, and maybe the task force doesn't, but if the task force believes that participation in the TEFCA should address aspects of information blocking, that we would recommend to ONC that that connection be made clear. All right. Anybody on the phone believe their tier one issues were not addressed? Okay, let's go down to tier two. And again, just looking, making sure this is appropriately framed. And then making sure, again, that some of the are these tier two issues really tier one issues? You know, do we have the right broad priorities? So number one is we had a point on the use of cloud vendor outside of the United States, it wasn't clear in the TEFCA if I've got a data center operation that's not a cloud operation, is that U.S. only? And then it's also not clear what operations can and can't be in and outside the United States. There are, you know, many folks who use services vendors who could be a mix of onshore and offshore. I don't think we have clarity right now on that issue. summary of disclosures, and there was a related issue relating to auditable events that we probably should collapse in with summary disclosures. Whose obligation is it to provide a summary of disclosures, particularly when these are multi-system and multi-actor queries? I don't think we understand where the obligations rest and for what purposes they rest. If I go query somebody else through a broadcast query via my QHIN, who's obligated to provide a summary of disclosures for what? Somebody remind me what CUI stands for.
Controlled unclassified information.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Controlled unclassified information. So, I guess the question is the TEFCA, the way I'd frame this question is the TEFCA definition here sufficient to enable federal actors to participate? Because I think many of us have had experience with VHA, with DOD, and with SSA, and they all have slightly different information security requirements and slightly different requirements relative to handling of information. And there's the CUI designation, but it's not clear that that's sufficient for federal actors to participate. And then we talked about specific authority, backup and recovery, and whether that's actually appropriate for the MRTCs. Okay. So, David, you have your hand up?
Oh, just on a tier two, on the security tagging, I think there's a much broader question there around, I'm blanking on what we used to call it, it's redisclosure of information. What do we, if we require security tagging, do we create downstream obligations that go far beyond just the creation of the tag? And I apologize, I'm blanking on the term that we've used in the past for this broad space, but it'll come to me in a few minutes.
Privacy sensitive tagging or data tagging. And we had a whole long discussion about this with at the HITAC, where I think we noted that the standards were sufficient, but there were no policy enablement for there was no policy enablement for the standards, and we made recommendations for ONC that was something that needed to be addressed. All right, let's go down to tier three, and let's make sure that all of our tier three issues are tier three issues. I'd say, given the space and pace and time that we have, we may get to tier three issues, but we may not. And so if there's something that's really burning that you think should be a tier two issue, we should recommend that it be a tier two issue. So one is ID proofing and authentication. And I personally think this should be a tier two issue, and shame on me for not flagging that yesterday. Auditable events, I think we've addressed that already in summary of disclosures. So I think we can get to auditable events in the context of summary of disclosures. And that organizational identity, turns out we don't have that many tier three issues, or tier two issues are basically coextensive with tier three issues. So given that list, are there other items that are burning a hole in people's pockets that are not represented as one of our tier one, tier two, or tier three issues that we would be remiss as a task force for not discussing? All right, hearing none. Why don't we proceed then through the rest of our time together to chunk through our tier one issues. I'm going to propose, we've already addressed, so when we go back to broad goals, we've already addressed some answer for the broad goals of the TEFCA. And, you know, this would be a recommendation to ONC that ONC explicitly state that the TEFCA is there to enable better treatment, better quality of care, and a more efficient health system, and that we recommend that ONC clearly link participation in the TEFCA to address relevant information blocking requirements for participant actors, including HIT vendors and provider organizations. So I think the task force agreed as a group that that was the recommendation. I'm going to see if – yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I know there are opinions out there. I'm wondering – I'm trying to agree with you in the sense that I think wordsmithing around that recommendation when it gets crafted, that there's hopefully room in there to incorporate sentiment that I've heard, but people feel strongly about this one. But I think I agree with you that the general sentiment is captured and that we can wordsmith the recommendation, but I wanted to ask if that was, in the interest of time, if the task force would agrees with that.
But so John, first of all, if there's nuances here that we're not capturing that can be quickly and easily discussed, then we probably should discuss it because I think it's kind of an important one. But then I also agree with you that we'll wordsmith the recommendations in the context of recommendations letter. We probably want to go red first and before we get to that point.
Yeah, this is David. I'd like to hear your nuance, John, just to know what we would be coming back to.
So a couple things. I, Arian, I've lost track of which task force we discussed this on, but the second bullet about presume to address some are the words that I circled, because I agree that, on the one hand, my opinion is that I don't think participation in the TEFCA ecosystem should be a complete safe harbor. It should be presumed that anyone in the TEFCA ecosystem obviously is trying to share information and not block information. So there's a question of what does that mean? If I'm participating in TEFCA, what does that assure in terms of not being in trouble for information blocking? That would be point number one. I'll get out point number two and then I'll shut up. Point number two is completely separate, is a sentiment of TEFCA is supposed to be a framework, and we're using words like obligations, and there's words like conditions of participation that get pulled out in the CMS rule, not necessarily linked to TEFCA, but I just want to be clear on, because I know I'm not the only one that has sentiment in this area, so I'm trying to speak for a group that I'd invite to chime in, is TEFCA, where's the right place on the line between required obligation and voluntary framework and for TEFCA to meet its purpose as under 21st Century Cures?
Right. Okay. Great points. Sasha's got her hand up.
Oh, thanks. And I think John hit on sort of my nuance here too, which was that when we say link TEFCA participation with info blocking requirements, I can see two directions in which that link might go. Most of our conversation has been around how participation in the TEFCA would prove information sharing to some degree or another. And I think if we're also discussing if choosing to participate, not to participate in TEFCA in one particular role or another, either whichever potential roles might be eligible to a particular actor, implies information blocking, I think that's a separate conversation that we would want to have very explicitly. I share John's concern about the intent of it being a voluntary framework and any implications from that perspective.
Yeah, I have not heard from the task force any presumption of participation, this is more an this is more of the discussion of the task force has been more around the incentive to participate as opposed to the requirement to participate. So I guess the way I think the sentiment of the task force is that if I participate in the TEFCA, that should address some of my information blocking obligations, and that there are multiple ways to address those same information blocking obligations, so there's no requirement to participate in the TEFCA. I think that's the sentiment of the task force.
What I've heard also, I just wanted to make sure that as we do the nuanced drafting here, that that carries forward and I wasn't missing something.
Yep. David, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, just, I mean, I think to me it just keeps coming back to that word incentive. So, you know, the industry is engaged in a ton of activity doing almost everything that TEFCA describes already. So if it's purely voluntary, why would existing data sharing entities, HINs, become QHINs? And maybe more to the point, why would participants feel obligated to join a QHIN? There needs to be some incentive or that creates an expectation that this is the right thing to do. This is the best way to solve some problem that we're not already solving. And I don't know that we have to enumerate what we think that is, but if ONC expects it to be successful, they better have an idea of why people would go do this.
Yep.
David, I would actually approach that from the opposite perspective, which is that if TEFCA is going to be successful, it needs to have a service that it offers, not that we should artificially create one with a regulatory obligation.
Well, I mean, you know, it could be a variety of pushes and pulls. It just needs to be something that there's an expectation of what it is. It won't happen if you just drop it out there and say, let's see what happens. It's too cumbersome. So pushes and pulls, a little bit of both, some reason for people to go disrupt what they're already doing and start over with TEF.
I think that, David, I think the sense of the task force right now is that it's appropriate to have a pull but not a push. Unless you can frame up an articulate notion of a push that the full task force would agree with. I think of push as some obligation to participate. And I think the sense of the task force is it should be a reason to participate because it gets you something that you don't get by not participating, or it addresses obligations that you otherwise have to manually address or address through potentially more cumbersome means if you don't participate.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I use the word incentive. That's a pull thought. You've got to have some reason that makes sense to you, ideally because you want to do it. But if it helps you address other obligations, which might be in other regulatory settings like information blocking, that's an incentive.
Yep.
We don't have to create a new push, you know, but we can clearly link it to existing pushes.
I think at this level, we've got the high level sense of the task force, and I just recommend that we keep going down the list. All right. So applicable law. John, can I pass the baton over to you for leading us through this discussion, and then I can flip over for the QTF discussion?
Sure, let me give it a whirl. And I'm going to need help of some of those who were commenting on, there was a FTC versus HIPAA, was that in this category? I think, David, that was you.
Yeah, that's what I was considering, and I'll give you just a test case. We have, some of us have participated in CARIN, a group trying to promote consumer access to their own health data, and CARIN has put out a model code of conduct, which has contractual language that entities who want to access consumer data should hold themselves voluntarily accountable to. Subject possibly to FTC contract language. It struck me that TEF has some similar kinds of conditions, those minimum necessaries that we talked about yesterday, that, you know, kind of overlap and align with something like what Karen is doing. So my question is, if I were an entity trying to start a, you know, health record bank or some other kind of consumer-driven health service, would I understand why I would want to participate through TEFCA, or whether I would just want to treat, you know, the APIs as my play field and bypass the TEFCA because the minimum necessaries are out of sync with what the rest of the industry is doing? So the things that are regulated under HIPAA, we all understand pretty well. It's good to clarify those boundaries. It's this new space of things that aren't regulated under HIPAA where alignment between TEF and other players is going to have to happen.
That's a pretty wordy way of explaining it. Sorry for the wordiness.
No, that's great. The other area, at least that was in my head, was in the areas where the TEF includes obligations under HIPAA, do we have clarity on how and when existing operations already address the TEF obligations, or are we creating net new obligations that are extra to HIPAA?
Right, that was something I was trying to wrap my head around yesterday. Are there examples that we could offer that I'm trying to think of one myself as demonstrating the problematic nature of I'm a HIPAA-covered entity, and then I go to participate in the TEFCA ecosystem, and now it's unclear to me which law applies when?
Yeah, well, it's all of the HIPAA obligations that are placed on QHINs and participant actors that are there in the case where they're not already BAs or CEs. But is it clear that the BA and CE obligations already address those obligations, or do I have to sort of doubly assure or do different things in different situations?
Is this one and the same with or different from the concern that I believe you raised yesterday of when am I operating under the TEFCA and therefore complying with TEFCA related regulation, and when am I doing things outside TEFCA and therefore do those regulations cease to apply? I don't know if I represented that accurately.
Yeah, so this is my example. This is really under individual access, and I think we should discuss it at that point.
Okay.
But there are activities where I'm, you know, I use the example of a fruit company that has effectively a health record bank that's maintained on device, and actors may be enabling individual access to store the data, and then subsequently enabling dispersal of data for research purposes. And again, not to be coy, but this is exactly the model that the arrhythmia study that Apple and I forget who else, Stanford, participated in, that was exactly the model that they used, was the Apple Watch stored data in the health app, but also any data that I pull down from participating health systems also get stored in the health app, and then as an individual, I authorize Apple to share that data for research purposes. I think there's a presumption in the TEF that those would be TEF activities, and I think there's a presumption that other people would have that those would be on the individual access or sort of the individual determination of where their data goes side. And I think we need to be clear about that. But I would put that under the individual access space.
Yes, this is David. I agree that most of the things I was thinking of are centered around individual access, because that's where we, you know,
bring in a new regulatory framework with contractual commitments under FTC. And my concern is that, you know, the NPRM is creating some very clear mandates for direct consumer access via APIs to their own data. The TEF creates an alternate channel for that data access that has some theoretical advantages in that you could get all of it all at once. We need to be clear that there's not something that stops that from being operational because people don't like the constraints or the constraints don't fit, you know, existing laws, et cetera. So just how does it line up with the API requirements under the NPRM? We'll get at this, I think.
And do you see that as something we'll get to under IAS then?
I think that's a question to Arian.
Well, David, issue that you're raising, is it appropriate to discuss under the IAS distinction as opposed to the applicable law distinction or discussion point?
Sure. Yeah. Although I think the sticking point may be some of these QT or MRTCs, you know, that the minimum necessary one in particular, and some of the things about reciprocity constraints if you are an IAS actor. So, yeah, most of them there are IAS-related questions. I agree.
So let's make sure let's make sure we're touching on other things that we've captured in this box, and I want to make sure I'm tracking. So others, please help me. Differences in roles for covered entities and BAs as it relates to provisions in the MRTCs. Can anyone elaborate on or champion that one?
I can give you guys an example of one that you might want to look at. The breach notification requirement, 6.1.1. So, you know, that has specifically, we say, you know, the requirements that are applicable to business associates. And then there's like an additional, if the QHIN is a covered entity, it has additional responsibilities. I think that was brought up yesterday, like when are you, when does the TEFCA entity that has to comply with the provision, when do they have to satisfy the role as the covered entity, or are they satisfying the role as the business associate, if that's different?
Right. There's also notification requirements. There's accounting for disclosures requirements. You know, there's additional requirements that overlap with existing requirements already under HIPAA that may be also obligations of a BAA that are delegated.
And so this is David again. Oh, go ahead, John.
No, go ahead, David.
Well, I say that this is another thing maybe comes up under IAS, but you don't need a BAA to access the APIs as a consumer aggregator. Do we, by creating new requirements under TEFCA, drive those users, those IAS potential users, away from TEF because of asymmetrical requirements? It's back to the regulatory question.
Oh, I wanted to back to the point that the example that Zoe gave and making sure that we're clear on that point. My understanding yesterday is that the requirements in here that are, I'll call it, subset of HIPAA, are specifically applying to non-covered entities. And so if you're a covered entity, HIPAA rules apply and should be unambiguous to you. If you are not otherwise covered by HIPAA, these are your requirements. Is there ambiguity in there that we need to weigh in on?
Is that clear? So, and again, probably shame on me. I've read the TEF back to front.
You should have read it front to back.
I should have read it from front to back. Is that clear, Zoe, that the obligations under the TEF that are already covered entity and BA obligations apply only in the case where you're, where the HIN is transacting on behalf of a non-covered entity and doesn't have a BA? Or do they apply independent of whether I have a BA or I'm a covered entity?
I think I may have gotten lost in a double negative in there, but I think what you're saying is they apply, the provisions in the MRTCs apply to everyone,
yeah,
regardless.
That's
of
what I thought.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yes.
So the provisions apply regardless of whether I'm a covered entity or a BA of a covered entity, which is why I'm raising this question of they apply because I might not be a BA or might not be a covered entity, and we want to make sure that the applicable parts of HIPAA apply to those actors. But if I'm already a covered entity and already a BA, do I now have slightly different overlapping sets of obligations that I need to prove compliance to? Or
it sounds like the answer may be yes.
Yeah.
And so perhaps that doesn't sound particularly elegant to me. Is there the makings of a recommendation there?
I would recommend, I would propose a recommendation that covered entities and BAs for covered entities should or would I want to create the effect of a safe harbor, but basically the BAs and covered entities that are already meeting the appropriate obligations are meeting those appropriate obligations and don't need to or should not need to address additional contracting terms unless there are particular requirements that are extra to HIPAA and BAA terms. And maybe recommendation number two is that ONC should be utterly clear in the MRTCs which of the obligations would normally be addressed through BAAs or the covered entity's existing obligations and which of the obligations are extra to those obligations.
Arian, just to make sure I'm following you, can I throw an example out there and see if this is what you're talking about? So like the written privacy summary, for example.
Yep.
I guess based on kind of what I heard from you is that if you're a covered entity or business associate and you're already doing a notice of privacy practice through HIPAA, then you shouldn't additionally have to do a second, you know, written privacy summary just for the purposes of the TAFCA.
Right. And if I'm an HIN who contracts with covered entities and does not contract with non-covered entities, I shouldn't need to force my covered entities to already submit a notice of privacy practices because they're already doing that.
And I heard, and again, we'll craft this in a recommendation and review it, but I think I heard that there was two suggestions we might give the ONC. One is option A, participation in HIPAA should be a safe harbor if it's close enough to avoid this two regulations problem. Or alternatively, if you're going to say, the notice of privacy practices is good enough, you just need to add these specific two things to be super extra clear on
what those
two things are. Yeah,
totally.
Okay. I was interested in disruption to current arrangements, and somebody offered a good illustrative example, which I have now lost earlier in the call. Does anyone remember the Zoe? It may have been you. I don't want to put you on the spot. Go ahead. Thank you.
I think it ties into sort of everything that we've been talking about in the past few minutes. So the idea of we have this new regulatory landscape, and we don't want to be adding additional disruptions to already existing agreements and existing BAAs.
So I think I got it. So the presumption, and now that I think about it, it probably is an accurate presumption, is that this is going to, well, I think it's actually stated that there's a presumption that TEFCA would require QHINs, well, let's pick on participants and participant members, because I think they're a clearer example, is if you already have an agreement, there's a presumption that your agreements are going to have to be modified if you're going to participate in the TEFCA ecosystem. I was taking that as kind of an inconvenient truth of TEFCA. Is that not where everybody else is?
That is the intent. The agreements would have to be modified.
Taking off my chair's hat and putting on my health information exchange guy hat, that is one of, if not the scariest thing about TEFCA.
Yeah.
That's why I'm concerned about incentives.
Yeah. And in the Commonwealth example, we had rooms of lawyers working out the participant agreements. I know that in the care quality example, working out participant agreements required additional rooms of lawyers. We've already burned our lawyer quota, and it would be highly inconvenient to reburn the lawyer quota.
So Zoe, other
and
than...
on top of that, just to make it worse, I mean, rolling out a change to a client base, it reinvokes legal review with every word you change in these documents, and that can take literally years to roll out across a large client base.
Yep.
I don't want to presume the point of view of the entire task force, but Zoe, other than ONC hearing, yep, that's a really scary part of TEFCA. What else would you like us to discuss?
I think it would be a flaw of the TEFCA if existing networks that have operated in good faith and actually established mutual inter-network operations in practice would then be obligated to go back and reword contracts and go through this laborious process yet again. So, this is where being ultra explicit around here are the new things, and also creating maybe safe lanes or appropriate paths where if I have language, I don't have to have the explicit language. I should be able to map language that I already have to the obligations under the TEF.
And Arian, maybe that's what you're trying to say, but rather than just feeding back to ONC, yeah, if you make us rewrite our agreements, that's a huge problem. Is there any way to not have us to have to redo all of our agreements and not destroy TEF?
Right, and again, the point here is can we make these rather than written legal agreements? So the way the MRTCs work is they're effectively written legal language that ONC's lawyers, who were fantastic, have drafted. Which would then be presumed to have to flow down into RCE obligations, QHIN obligations, or participant obligations, which would require redrafting contracts and reopening this massive can of worms. Is there an approach instead where existing networks and participants can look at their language that is functionally equivalent to the model? Can we think about this as a model language exercise as opposed to an actual legal contract that are the actual literal MRTC terms?
Or even a process maybe whereby a given network can say, hey, could you guys look at my agreement and tell me if it meets the intent and is therefore okay? Because that would save me. Okay, that was helpful.
That was easy.
Yeah.
It might, this is David, just a thought on that. I wonder if you could even, there's a subset of the core purposes for which existing networks are actually already under operation, where you might be able to sort of grandfather them in quickly and have it, you know, sort of a non-disruptive, no new contracts for those core operations. But for some of the newer permitted purposes, maybe like individual access or something like that, you recognize that those require extensions to contracts so that you kind of split the world between the stuff that's already working pretty well versus the stuff that's new enough to justify the actual legal review.
Okay, is there anything else?
This is Mark Savage. I'm sorry, I was off the phone, so I missed most of this conversation, but does it, from your experience, does it help to, instead of think of changing an existing contract, to think of adding a new contract that's just focused on TEFCA? Does that help at all?
If there are clear amendments, this is why we want to recommend that if there are genuinely new obligations, that they be explicitly marked as genuinely new obligations. And secondly, that there be a process to map existing contractual terms to the model MRTC terms. But in general, it is easier to say, hey, here's an amendment that you're signing because you're participating in the TEF, and that's a good thing for you because of all these benefits that you get. As opposed to opening up a contract that exists. So I'm sort of rambling, but to the extent that this can be framed as genuinely new terms where you get to address all of the existing terms through your existing contracts and only do an amendment for the changes, that's logistically easier, although it's still hard, than opening up all of the legal language that you've already negotiated and already gotten people to sign that is identical to, in spirit but not in letter, the MRTCs.
Yeah, so I'll just echo. I think the where my opinion is starting to form is there the compromise position may be there's no way that ONC can get what it believes TEFCA needs to be without forcing the rewrite or amendment of some agreements. But it would be great if there was two things. A, a little bit of, hey, that's close enough, so you don't need to fix that. But B, some way to get to the, okay, here's the things that you really have to rewrite in your contract. So this is the least threatening as possible amendment that you need to go back to your participants with. Not at all sure how to accomplish that, but that sounds like good work for an RCE. Are we okay to move on?
Before we move on, that's right. Before we move on, I just want to make sure the people on the phone who were phone only had their say. We haven't really been raising our hands, but that's okay.
Yeah, this is Anil. I'm good. I'm listening and absorbing. And again, I might have more to say later when I review everything. But I like the dialogue and the controversy around some of the nuances that were pointed out by John and others. Thanks.
Yep.
So this is Catherine. I just had a question for clarification. So in your recommendations, what would happen if an organization or entity, for example, is not covered by HIPAA or there's not an existing agreement in place? With this being a common agreement, is there a recommendation to still have, you know, something by which an organization would agree to that would be, you know, rooted in the MRTCs, so there would be an agreement?
Yeah.
Just trying to think through that.
No, I don't think any, but I shouldn't say that. I'm going to pull the sense of the task force, but I would presume that the task force thinks that it's a reasonable thing to understanding that non-covered entities are not bound by HIPAA to establish at least a minimum floor. The discussion that I've heard has been more around in areas where you've got covered, you've got existing networks who are primarily networks of covered entities, and where the agreements that have been negotiated with appropriate BAA terms, et cetera, already address many of the MRTC terms, that we not go back and rewrite those. I believe there is, and maybe just frame up for the task force any violent disagreement, I believe there is consensus that in areas where those terms don't exist or where those obligations don't exist on those actors, that it's appropriate to make sure that those obligations be clearly placed through contractual terms on the actors.
I'll add, so yes, there's absolutely no, John Kansky's opinion, there's no pushback against the idea that where there needs to be an agreement, there should be an agreement. What you're hearing, I believe, Catherine, is that, using my organization as an example, it's taken us 15 years to build our network around a common agreement, using those words deliberately, one organization at a time, and the idea of going back to organizations that are it's not a small deal to go back to them and say, that thing that you're comfortable with, but maybe just barely, I have to ask you to completely reopen that, relook at it, and decide if you want to sign again, is frightening.
Yes, helpful. Thank you all both for that. And Zoe can probably attest to some of this, it's trying to meet, I would say, the statutory requirement that this is a common agreement. So I look forward to reading kind of what the group recommends and trying to square that with, you know, the mapping to existing agreements. So helpful. Thank you for that.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Should we go down to exchange modalities in the QTF?
Oh, joy.
Yeah. So I'm going to frame up an exchange modality question before we go into the QTF. And, you know, maybe I'm going to frame up two exchange modality questions. One is, in the exchange modalities themselves, do we understand what is meant by broadcast query? And do we believe that broadcast query is sufficient to meet the needs of the TEF? And then with respect to directed exchange, do we understand what is meant by directed exchange? And do we believe that, the functional requirements or MRTC requirements relative to directed exchange are sufficient to meet the policy goals that we've articulated? And this is independent of whether we think that the QTF is appropriate. This is more, do we know what we're actually shooting for that we should be judging the QTF against?
Arian, you need to
I'm going
to
presume David raised his hand.
Yeah, I was just going to say you need to be careful with that phrase, directed exchange. I think message delivery or...
message delivery, that's fine. Push delivery, you know,
well,
whatever.
Just to use the same, just to use... ONC's vernacular, our choices are targeted query, broadcast query, and QHIN message delivery.
QHIN message
QHIN
delivery.
Broadcast
okay.
Query, yeah.
Yep.
So I think I understand what targeted query is. I do not understand in the definition of the TEFCA 2 what broadcast query is. And I'm not sure I understand what message delivery. I think the purpose for message delivery is primarily around public health and delivery of, for example, surveillance reportable conditions, reportable labs for disease surveillance to state actors. Do we understand the message delivery functional requirements to be sufficient for those purposes? Let me just frame out those two questions. Number one is, do we understand what broadcast query is in the MRTCs and exchange modalities? And do we believe that broadcast query is sufficient to meet the policy goals that we've articulated and established?
So Arian, I'll be the Laurel to your Hardy on this one. That was a really old reference. So a broadcast query is when a participant member sends a something labeled a broadcast query up to their participant, who sends it to their QHIN, who says, yeah, this is a query that needs to go to everybody. Please send it out and let's bring all the responses back together. So I understand conceptually, I think that's what we mean, but then when you start to play out, wait a minute, that doesn't work. That's really your point, is it logically we can't wrap our heads around how that would work without an RLS, or how long do you wait for responses and how do they get aggregated? Is that where you're going?
Yeah, so the test one established a functional requirement for an RLS. The TEF 2 definition of QHIN broadcast query is a QHIN's electronic request for EHI in the context of the common agreement that requests the EHI from all other QHINs to the extent permitted by the common agreement and applicable law. I'm a QHIN. So first of all, I'm a QHIN. I'm obligated to send it to every other QHIN. And then I'm a QHIN who's received a broadcast query. What do I do with it?
You broadcast it to everybody who broadcasts it to everybody else.
Okay, yeah. That sounds like a bad idea.
It does.
And we watch the lights go dim.
This is David. I think part of the problem is broadcast query presumes a technical approach by the word broadcast, and it really ought to be cast as a functional requirement, and I would say a federated query. And the definition of what federated query should accomplish, and then let the RCE figure out how to make it scale, right?
That's exactly the proposal that I have in my head. I just want to, if you actually read the TEF 2 and you read the definition of broadcast query as a capitalized and bolded term in the MRTCs, the definition of a broadcast query is a QHIN's electronic request for an individual's EHI in the context of the common agreement that requests EHI from all other QHINs to the extent permitted by the common agreement and applicable law. So the functional obligations of a QHIN is to query other QHINs. There's no functional obligation to respond, but I'm not sure what to do with a response, because you're individually, I get wrapped up on this because I don't understand what the response obligations of a QHIN are.
Arian,
are you confused about their language, or are you confused about what you think ought to happen?
I'm confused both about what's supposed to happen in the proposed language and suspect that it's not what should happen. So again, the definition of a targeted query is that a QHIN asks a QHIN for information. But again, I don't understand functionally. So let's even take the notion of a targeted query. Do we understand if you were designing and operating a QHIN, so, you know, John Kansky with IHIE, and you received a targeted query, do you understand what you should do with a targeted query? Because in the context of the TEF 2, a targeted query is not a query of a provider or a hospital or a location of care. It is a query to another QHIN for information about EHI.
My assumption,
I don't.
my assumption on a targeted query was that and I'm going to go all the way down to participant member on purpose, a participant member needs to get some information that resides in another participant member whose participates in a completely different QHIN, but the transaction identifies that participant member and its QHIN, and so it sends it up through its QHIN over to the other one, down to that participant member, and brings back the answer. That, to me, was what I was thinking.
That's not the way it reads.
Would it be helpful to look at figure one? Because I think figure one is trying to illustrate this, and I worried it oversimplified what would actually happen. But
we can look at figure one. I'm just reading the language, though. So I'm reading the actual language in the MRTCs.
Fair.
And the definition of a targeted query is a QHIN's electronic request for an individual EHI, sometimes referred to as a poll, from specific QHINs in the context of common agreement, to the extent permitted by the common agreement and applicable law. So the only difference between targeted query and broadcast query is whether one QHIN asks a defined set of another QHINs, or whether one QHIN asks literally all QHINs for information about EHI. There is no obligation in the definition of a targeted query that it be for a setting of care. Figure one. Sasha, can you tell me what page figure one is on?
81. Page 81.
It might also be helpful to review section 2.2.1.
I don't know what I'm looking at the document. 81.
I have it on page 80 of the QHIN technical framework draft.
Matches what you.
It doesn't match the definition.
In the language, yeah.
No, it does not match the definition in the language.
Yeah, I'm also concerned that this diagram is misleading, or I guess oversimplified at least.
Can you elaborate?
It doesn't seem in our review to match the standards that are specified for actually performing this, or it's over prescriptive about how those would be implemented.
It leaves out a
lot of steps.
The reality is that everyone who's done this has done some form of an RLS to address the multicast problem. And some form of an RLS can mean geofencing and geolocating a query, can refer to individual participant preferences regarding high priority settings of care, can include a literal RLS that is a demographic link across locations of care, or can include, in some cases, a full document repository where the actor is not only providing the RLS but also the response. And each of those exchange approaches has been used in practice and has demonstrated value in practice. And this approach seems to be, the definitional approach seems to be none of them. And the proposed sequence diagram appears to be maybe one of them, although it's, again, not really clear how it would work in the context of broadcast query.
So how do we provide useful feedback to the ONC? It sounds like there's some lack of clarity on what's intended by the modalities. There may be some perceived contradiction between language and diagrams. There may be some lack of detail or perhaps too much specificity. I don't know where to go.
Yeah,
so I think,
go ahead, David.
I have an Well, I think the best way to deal with this, given that there'll be an RCE that has stakeholders with deep understanding of the technical choices, is to the clearest possible functional requirements for what you expect these things to do, but to stay away from any description of how they should do them. Let the RCE figure that out with its stakeholders.
I completely agree with that. And I also think that we have a natural understanding of what a targeted query is and a broadcast query is. We probably should propose that that natural understanding should be reflected in the TEP terms. I think we would all think a targeted query is a specific request to a specific location of care that is mediated through one or more QNs. And I think we would expect that a broadcast query is a request for patient information regardless of location of care, where the QHIN or where the responding QHIN takes appropriate measures to make sure that the appropriate data is returned, but where we don't specify the mechanism for how all that stuff happens and allow for modalities where we run an RLS, modalities where we run a document repository, modalities where we apply appropriate heuristics to retrieve data. I guess that would be the proposal that I would have, is that we define functional requirements for what a broadcast query is and targeted query is, and then remove the QTF implementations and punt it to the RCE and the QHINs to work out what that actually would mean in practice.
So that all makes sense to me. Go ahead.
I was going to say that made sense to me, too. I would consider possibly adding the notion that we might want at a functional level to suggest something about what kind of stuff you expect to get back on these queries. Again, in the real world, the existing entities have already settled on some fairly consistent standards, but sort of saying things like you would expect to get a summary of current best knowledge of that patient, plus a list of encounters available for deeper information if needed. Something like that at the high level would probably be okay to put at the functional level without actually diving into saying, you know, XCA or CDA version 2.1 modified, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so we're being gently reminded to go to public comment. Mark's got his hand up. Let's go to Mark first and then go to public comment, if that's okay.
Thanks, Aaron. This has been implicit in people's comments, but I'd just like to make it explicit. I think if it would be good to hear from ONC how they think this works, how they might explain the difference between the language and figure one before we do the work that's just been outlined. I'm just curious to hear. They've heard us. We haven't really heard from them. Curious to hear.
Okay, good point. So maybe for next call, we can line up a presentation from ONC about what they intended for targeted query and broadcast query.
Agreed.
Okay. Should we go to public comment?
Sure. Operator, can you open the line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Do we have any callers in the queue?
We have none at this time.
Okay, thank you. Arian?
Okay. So there's some good public comment or chat between Sasha and David on the worry that the way broadcast query is defined is that it could well be a brute force, quote, spray and pray, unquote. I think everyone would acknowledge I think everyone on this task force would acknowledge that that's architecturally unsound.
Arian?
Yeah.
One other thing to think about in this context is in the NPRM, there's some language about an ADT notification into a presumably a community of providers that should know about a patient encounter or patient activity. In discussions with Dr. Rucker at HIMSS, the Commonwealth team raised the possibility that that ADT notification could become the basis for building a national record locator capability. And he specifically said, please put that in your recommendations to us. He thought that was a good idea. So I would just say this is another place where there might be a link back to the information blocking rules that says it's not only okay for you to use your ADT activity for this purpose, you should use your ADT activity for this purpose, building record locator.
Okay.
This is a place where TEF could clarify.
Yeah, we could do it as a task force discussion. That seems like it's a specific Commonwealth discussion, and I'm trying to separate the side of my brain.
I was
a good task force chair.
Yeah, not tying. I was just saying that was the context of the conversation. But Rucker's request was broadly as part of a generic record locator capability. There's a lot of, as you know, there's a lot of concern of I shouldn't use ADT data for this purpose, or I can't use this ADT data for this purpose, or I don't want to use ADT data for this purpose. But I think TEFCA's success depends in large measure on convincing people that, in fact, they should and can use ADT data for this purpose.
Okay, so this is around the question of when is it appropriate. So this is the discussion that we were involved, that Commonwealth was involved in care quality, that ended up being a fairly thorny issue around establishing norms that it's appropriate to use the output of query activities or the output of, you know, of message delivery activities to inform future query activities to optimize the results of those queries. I'm trying to put this in very neutral terms. That if I know that patient A's data was found in location B, it should be appropriate subsequently to use that knowledge to make sure that I'm querying location B because I have I've updated my priors.
Correct, and even more direct or more clear, you know, patient ADT activity, which is mentioned in the NPRM as something that should be used to distribute messages to providers, should also be available to update record locator.
Yeah,
you get a direct awareness of where the activity occurred.
I'm trying to use the language of the TEF and talk about message delivery, targeted query, and broadcast query, because ADT notification is not an exchange modality in the TEF. Okay, we got two more minutes. Anybody else want to get a word in before we adjourn? I think when we come back, we'll explore this topic in more depth. I think we've got some decent first pass recommendations, and we also said that when we our next meeting, which I think is on Tuesday, we'll ask ONC to update their perspective on or their understanding of the definitions of targeted query, broadcast query, message delivery. And what was intended. Cheryl?
Yes, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to get my hand raised before, but I did just want to say that the way I read the TEF, which, you know, I know we have a lot of technical people on here, but I don't know if we want to have all this technical solutions, because at the end of the day, there may not be the ideal solution to deliver something today, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be a goal. And maybe it's more the implementation process and schedule that is impacted versus that it's actually included as a goal of the environment. Because I do still believe that public health should be part of this, even though there's not a good solution for providing those public health reports today. There will be if we state a direction, and that's what I thought they tried to do was strip out the technical aspect and make this a business function of what's supposed to be supplied, so that it allows for it to grow and innovate and go forward.
Thank you, Cheryl. So I think the task force generally agrees, because it's what we said last time, which is that the TEF should outline functional requirements that are sufficient to meet the policy goals. We have yet to look at message delivery and the functional requirements that are outlined there. I think in the discussion so far, we've looked at the functional requirements for targeted query and broadcast query, and concluded that those functional requirements are insufficient for the policy goals. But we're over time, and we will meet again, I believe, on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you. Talk soon. Bye.
All right.